Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm very excited to be moderating today's webinar on training program development. Every collection agency executive knows that new hires and even long-term employees need training. But what should go into that training, and how should it be taught? In this webinar sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we have a panel of training experts from across the credit and collection industry who are here to share their insights into help building a successful training program. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. You'll get the chance to learn more about them a little later in our program today. Before I introduce our panel, let me take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the credit collection industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, publishes a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, offers a number of exciting podcasts, videos, and manages a Slack channel for all for the credit collection industry. The site is free for everybody to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you're all spending a few minutes every day checking out what it's got to offer. Now let me introduce you to today's panel. Melissa Alston is a training manager with First Investors Financial Services Group. She's been in the collection industry for the past 24 years and spent the past 17 years at First Investors. She previously managed a collection team of 13 before transitioning to the leadership, development, and training side. Beth Conklin has more than 24 years of in the collection industry, starting out as a collector, team leader, and supervisor of collections before moving into the role of manager of the training and regulatory compliance. Beth is currently an account executive with State Collection Service. Prior to that, she was the director of training and development at McCarthy, Burgess, and Wolf. Beth has the TSP and CCCO designations as well as is a certified instructor for ACA International. Beth has earned the Fred Kirshner Award in 2013 and 2015, as well as being recognized as ACA International Certified Instructor of the Year for 2012 and 2016. Courtney Fleming joined Wilbur Group in October 2010 and is currently the Chief Personnel Officer. She earned her undergraduate degree in risk management and financial services from Illinois Wesleyan University. Courtney assists the Wilbur team with recruiting efforts and developing training paths, as well as working to ensure proper compliance is met throughout the departments with role and process specific audits. Courtney's a certified instructor with ACA International as well and leads teleseminars as well as face-to-face sessions pertaining to the collection industry. Through this association, she also holds the following designations: Professional Collection Specialist, Instructor Professional, and Credit Collection Compliance Officer Professional and Officer. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to ask questions and we'll get to them as our discussion is ongoing. To submit a question, please either enter it into the Q&A tab or the chat module on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With that, hopefully you've heard most of everything I'm going to say today because I'm going to turn it over to our panel. And I'm sure they've got a lot to talk about on this topic. So panel, thank you very much for joining me today. Very excited to have our discussion. With that, let's start. Let's talk about training from two different perspectives, from the new hire perspective, as well as continuing education for employees who've been at the company for a while. How should agencies differentiate that training? And Melissa, since you come first alphabetically, we'll let you go first.
Well, you know, with new hire training, you're building the foundation. So you've got to give everything that they need to know, policy, procedure, you know, compliance regulations, just everything, because you're building the foundation, then they're going to go to the production floor, and then they're going to finish building the house. But it's still an ongoing process. And then once they've been there for a while, and there you need to do the continuing training, we do at First Investors a lot of refresher courses, a lot of refresher training, things that they've gone through already in the past. But the longer you've been with a company, if you've been there 5 years, 2 years even, you may forget or you may start doing things your own way as opposed to following procedure. So it's always important to refresh the people that have been there, you know, the employees that have been there long term, just to keep them up to date, keep them informed with what should be going on, what they should be doing daily.
Well, and I think that that's, I'm going to piggyback off of a few things that you said, Melissa. So totally with the new hire training, of course, you're giving them their basics, their foundation, systems, you know, again, regulations, talk off, how they should handle your dispute processes, your complaint process, your negotiation hierarchy. And it's going to be very granular, right? It's going to be very basic, step-by-step, exactly how your organization want your collectors to perform on the phone. As far as that continued training and development, you know, you're dealing with tenured staff, right? So they've been on the phones, they've been working, again, whether it's 5 months, 8 months, 5 years. And to Melissa's point, sometimes they tend to forget things, or they start to mirror behaviors of other people they know that may not necessarily be within the organization. And they may start to pick up some bad habits or get away from the things that they learned in training. And so I think that that continued development is critical. One thing that I like to do is I like to look at, when I was doing the training program in my previous two lives, is I would really look at call evaluations, and I would get with my quality assurance team, and I would look at calls. I would look at how they were scoring on those calls and try to find common trends or things that may look like they're starting to fall out of sync, which would help me develop what do we need to cover for that continued training and development. Because at the end of the day, the collectors are there to perform, right? They're responsible for production. And when you take them off the phones and you're trying to, you know, do some kind of continued training or development to them, you're hitting their pocketbook, right? Because their time is valuable. And you're pulling them off the phones. And so trying to be prepared in advance to know what you want to touch on and what you think needs to be trained or reviewed. It could be something as simple as a client requirement. It could be something as simple as, you know, maybe how they're closing their calls. They're not getting enough full and complete information. But having that ready and available, so when you do that training on that developed staff, that the respect is there for you with their time and they're respectful for you with what you're trying to retrain or recoach them on. Courtney, I know you spent a lot of time in this area. Tell us what you got.
Yes, I think I can add to that where we have new hire training tracked where they're getting the basis, kind of learning about how to complete what their job is. And Beth, you had mentioned retouching on points where they might be kind of slipping certain quality points, certain call points, but really those are areas of improvement. And so when we talk about continuing training in our office, we talk about tips, tricks, and any policy changes. But additionally, we take it one step further. Those items are going to help them to be successful in their roles, but what about professionally growing them? So there's something completely separate from our training track where we talk about a career progression. So in their role as a collector, what can we do to professionally develop them? Not remind them how to work the system or on quality issues, but really give them a chance to professionally develop. So we kind of have three different areas where we talk about new hire training, areas of continuing training, and then also progressing that person professionally.
Sure. And I think that that's a good point too. I'm going to just keep piggybacking off of you ladies, is when you talk about progression and, you know, looking at, you know, those employees that may want to grow within your organization. I mean, I'm sure we've all been there where we do look at promoting within, right? Well, just because you're a good collector doesn't really mean you might not be such a great supervisor or manager. Fair enough. And so when you do the continued development and training and you look at, like you said, a career progression or a career path, I know you call it that too sometimes, Courtney, is you're also investing in their future, and you're going to create a very functional team when you do that continued development and training, because you're investing in their strengths, you're working on their weaknesses, and it's really going to help you determine which employees really want to grow within the organization and what their capabilities are going to be for those positions. I mean, of course, I had a collector that was happy being a collector. Her name is Ellen. We would be in training every month on different areas of the company and the role as a collector, but she could care less. She just wanted to be a collector, responsible for herself. She knew how much money she wanted to make every month, and that was it. She had no interest in growing. And so maybe you do have employees like that. For me, that makes that development that you're doing with that training for those tenured employees even more critical, right? Because she just wants to be a collector. That's fantastic. But how can you keep her engaged? And what kind of tools can you put in place so the training does not become redundant and boring?
Yes, I think that's an important point too, of when we have training, not all agencies are going to have leadership openings. Like, you may not have a supervisor or a manager opening for months. And so as we're continuing to develop, it's developing our collectors in that particular role. And then you can identify, and Beth, you kind of touched on this, who has a interest in leading. Not everybody does. And mm-hmm. so you kind of learn as far as where their aspirations and where their goals are. And so in the time of need, you could have a bench of leaders that you've been working on to professionally develop that you know that goal is relevant to them.
Yeah, First Investors, we just launched a leadership program in 2019, the first official leadership program for high potentials and managers. So it's for leaders who are already in the role and then people who are interested in becoming leaders. And we do a lot of training on behavior and how to manage a staff
sure.
and just learning the fundamentals of leadership in itself. So that's something that we've been excited about that we're launching and getting the staff excited about. For those who are interested in moving forward and moving up in the company, it offers them something to look forward to and potentially apply for a leadership role later along when something comes available. So those things are very important to focus on as well.
Well, and to the point, how is the training different between new hire and tenured collectors? I mean, we're all talking about how it could be so different because once they're tenured, you're now looking into not just the basics, but expanding on that platform, right? For those potential leadership skills. I've also liked to, for ongoing training and development, I've also liked to really look at those collectors that may be struggling. Right? So we all have those collectors that they seem to be doing pretty good in new hire training. And they seemed pretty good, you know, when we call the bullpen, you know, mm-hmm. they were productive, but now they're kind of slipping. They're not hitting their numbers. They're not hitting the metrics or the goals that we have set forth for them. And so using that continued training and development opportunity to listen to those calls, maybe they have a strong opening, but they really struggle with closing the call. They just can't seal the deal. Maybe they're just struggling with how to get their full and complete information and they're not getting enough details to be able to determine if they should put them on a payment plan, if they would be able to settle or do a down payment. And so really looking at how they're performing on the phone and engaging with the consumer, I think is critical to that ongoing training and development as well.
Yes, that can be so specific to the person. So new yep. hire training, it's XYZ systems talk
yep.
off, where then it gets into more individualized. What is this person's weaknesses?
Yep.
What are their strengths? What are their goals? And so that can also be a differentiator between a cookie cutter for
yep.
this particular role training and what does this individual collector need to be successful.
Such a valid point too, Courtney. Like you said, when you're in that initial training and development, it's very specific. It's a platform, right? You know, on day one, you're going to cover ABC. On day two, maybe they're doing their testing. And day three, they're learning the systems. Day four, they're going to shadow. Day five, they're going to start making calls. And so it's very specific in that new hire training and development, whether it be a week-long class, a two-week-long class. And then to your point, once they get on the floor, okay, now it's going to become a little bit more individualized, right? Mm-hmm. So very valid point, Courtney. Thank you. That's great.
I'm just going to interject for a moment at the risk of stopping the great momentum that you've started. But what I'd like to do is just hit the pause button on the discussion for a minute. And I'd like to bring on and introduce Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning, who is the sponsor of today's event, to say a few words. Chris.
Thank you, Mike. And hello, everyone. We are grateful to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, the leading workforce education, training, and micro-learning application to companies in the collection industry. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees. Our clients are companies that want to gain and maintain a high level of assurance that their employees have mastered the skills and knowledge they expect them to have when interacting with consumers. Knowledge Source will automatically build the documentation of your company's training efforts for existing and prospective clients and even for regulators. For those of you I don't know or haven't met, I spent most of my career in the collection industry. I spent 30 years, most of that time in executive management, Knowledge Source was created to address many of the opportunities and challenges that I saw as a COO and CEO. Use Knowledge Source to implement an ongoing continuous training cycle where you are reinforcing the knowledge and skills you expect your employees to have when interacting with consumers, to present collection compliant company policies and procedures during onboarding training and at recurring schedules afterwards to gain acknowledgement and promote accountability that they have read and understand these documents. Implement or present tests during training events to validate they had learned what you had taught them, and at recurring schedules afterwards to get certifications for important areas of knowledge, FDCPA, HIPAA, if that applies, and other important subject areas. Present videos or slideshows, PowerPoints, or audio recordings during onboarding training courses and afterwards, importantly, to lower the or to impact and reduce the amount of time it takes for an employee to reach proficiency and afterwards for experienced employees to maintain a focus on best practices. In summary, Knowledge Source will close knowledge gaps, promote accountability, lower the cost of training, document for your for prospective and existing clients, regulators, and auditors that your company's proactive role in preventing errors, in addressing compliance nonconformities, and in maximizing revenue. To find out more about us, visit peakrevenuelearning.com. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Chris, and thank you very much again to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's event. With that, let's pick up with our discussion again. Melissa, there was a question about your leadership program. Someone wanted to ask what was built into it. Is there any other information you can provide about that?
Yeah, well, we have the participants read books, and we have book discussions. They're reading right now the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. They're going to read Emotional Intelligence. It is a 12-month-long program, and we talk about performance reviews, how to deliver disciplinary action, just all the basics of leadership and things that we go over the Berkman, which is an assessment to help people maybe better communicate with their team members from a management level, as well as employee to manager. So a lot of different facets of the program, just to those who are already in a management role to help better make them more well-rounded, and those who are looking to further their career into a management role, help them be better prepared. So hope that answers your question.
It wasn't my question, but if the person who asked the question has any other questions, I'm sure they can ask them. Another question that's come in, for collectors who we plan continuing professional development for, what are examples of topics?
So I'll start off. And so in my previous life, I was the director of training and development, and we would have a program that would create what we called ambassadors. And so what we had found were when we would have collectors go out and shadow on the floor, do side-by-sides with other collectors, those veteran collectors were kind of, you know, not as helpful as they could have been because they felt like their time was being taken away from them and they weren't getting any kind of rewards or accolades or any type of compensation for the time that they're taking to do a side-by-side for a couple hours with the new hires. So we created an ambassador program, and the ambassador program they had to apply to become an ambassador. And when they were an ambassador, what they did is they were compensated when they helped with the continued training and development of the new hire. So the new hires would shadow that employee. When they went on the floor, they would then work with that, the ambassador would work with the new hire, right? And kind of help them field questions and any issues or problems, help them second voicing on their calls, negotiations. And those ambassadors were then involved in other additional programs that touched on not to the highest level of human resources as your human resources manager or director would do, but how to handle some sticky situations as far as, you know, not paying attention on the, you know, when they're at their desks, maybe, you know, some small HR issues like tardiness, not coming back from break on time, personal calls at their desk, little things like that. It also, the program also entails how to set goals, how to look at goals, how to set KPIs, how to look at measurements, what to measure, how to measure it. It also entails so how to run certain reports in the system so they could kind of alleviate some of the responsibilities off the supervisors by taking on these type of responsibilities that would then help lift them up into more of a leadership role when the time came, if that was something they were still interested in. I know, Courtney, you have a career path that you guys outline some good details, and Melissa, I can only imagine what you all have too.
Correct. So we deal with industry specific. So kind of talking about those soft skills. So we have certain courses that they have to go through, dealing with how to respond to different individuals, the difference between empathy and sympathy, but also talking about kind of piggybacking off of that ambassador program is a mentorship program, mm-hmm. where they are assigned to an individual and helping them progress. That really gives us a good chance to kind of talk with the mentor about what they are identifying, what steps are they taking to kind of help that person. We may not go as far as teaching them pertaining to KPIs, how to come up with those, but we do really work with them so they have a understanding of how to work and develop others in their area. Because even though they may not have the title of supervisor or manager in their particular roles, they are being viewed as leaders. Melissa, do you have something similar to that?
We do. We have something called the Buddy Program, so very similar. So once the three-week training, once they're done with training, they go into a nesting bay. The nesting bay is just the new hires with two or three team leads that are working with them daily for the month. So they nest for a month. To just get them up to speed and where they need to be prior to hitting production. They're live on the phone, after taking calls for a few hours in the nest, and they'll have huddles with the team leads in order to discuss what happened on those calls, how they could have handled it differently, different things like that. And once they have gone on to production, then they're assigned a buddy, all the new hires. So they'll have the buddy for the first 4 months. So it's kind of a long program, but we want to get them in a space where they're comfortable, they're doing things the right way, the way they were trained, not doing things, changing it up and, you know, picking up bad habits. So yes, it works well.
How did you decide on 4 months?
It was with operations as well as training. You know, training didn't make that decision. We work tightly with operations since, you know, collections is their baby. So, sure. You know, together we came up with 4 months to be with their buddy.
Okay. Another question that's come in, that's something I definitely wanted to ask today, and that is, has anyone changed their training programs during the current work from home environment? I'll let the person who laughed first go first.
Of course, that's me.
Yes.
Has it changed? Absolutely. I mean, I can tell you just from, you know, our organization as well as a lot of my peers in the industry, most employees are now working remote, right? And so when you're dealing with trying to juggle working remote for folks that are normally in the office, that in itself is a whole nother ballgame, right? I mean, totally on itself, something different. And those folks are probably not used to working from home without the supervision or their peers around them. So you've got to juggle a good balance there, from hiring and recruiting to, you know, doing those virtual interviews when you're trying to hire somebody virtually, getting all those necessary forms signed, whether you're utilizing e-signatures, you're looking at, you know, making sure that they understand your policies and procedures, but not only that, looking at your training as a whole. So kind of similar to what we're doing today with our Zoom meeting where you all can see us out there, think about that with your new hires. You know, when you have a new hire training, your trainer is, you know, I mean, in my perspective, would be at home in their office doing virtual training just like we are with you all right now. I know that there are some tools out there that you can utilize that kind of help you tap right in. to their desktop. So when you're doing virtual training, if Melissa's having a struggle and she's not understanding where to log in on the system, or she's having some issues accessing a certain screen, you can kind of tap in virtually and help her with that, kind of like you're next to her, but you're kind of not. And then a big part of all that training and development as well is helping keep their morale up and the motivation. I'm a people person. I know a lot of you on the seminar today, you probably know that about me already, but I need people. I thrive off of that. And so if you have collectors that are in that same type of personality trait, how do you work through that when they're working remote? You know, trying to do any type of gamification, virtual contests, virtual fun, do a coffee break to, again, show faces, make sure that you're all seeing each other and staying connected to the best of your ability that you can. I'll be the first one to tell you, I hate to be on camera. I don't like it. But hey, it really helps to connect with everybody, doesn't it? And so all of that is quite a new way of doing things right now. And who's to say that, you know, that's not going to be what kind of starts to happen as we continue to move forward. You know, it's kind of like the new normal almost. Courtney, Melissa, what do you say?
Well, our training, like I said, is 3 weeks. So we've had 2 virtual training classes since COVID. Challenging, to say the least. 3 weeks on Zoom, have to be logged in from 8 to 4. It's been a lot, but, you know, we create rooms to separate us when I need to do some training with this. So it's 2 trainers on our training. So with the virtual, it'll be 2 of us. So if we have to take a break and go in another room, we can do that, another Zoom room. So we've learned how to work Zoom pretty well in order to make the training work. But we make it fun. We play games. You know, we give them extra breaks because this is so different.
Yep.
That, you know, being able to focus in on the screen and watching our screen, as well as having them manage practicing as we talk through, you know, it's just more challenging. So it's been successful though. You know, our first virtual training class, we had some hiccups, you know, and we kind of learned from those hiccups. So for the second class, we were able to iron those things out. So I've actually enjoyed it because I'm a people person too. I prefer to be in the classroom. I like to talk with people and connect with people. So it's been different being at home and trying to connect with the trainees virtually, but you just have to take that extra step and make the effort to do so. But it's been fun. We just had to incorporate some different types of games and things like that to make sure they were engaged and there and committed. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's important too for everybody to just recognize and realize we're all humans. We're all people. We're all going through the same thing, right? So it's not going to be perfect. You're going to have some technology issues. You know, you are going to have some challenges that, you know, you just learned to work through. I personally love Taco Chat. I don't know if anybody out there is familiar with tacochat.com. It's really, I think it's like $3 a person. And you can enroll as many people as you want. And it's really neat because it allows your team to still work together. So it's not just you as the trainer, working with this group of trainees, but they can be together as a group and they can give each other accolades by giving each other tacos. And so instead of a high five, you're going to high five a taco for great talk off, or you did great on your test, or you did this. And it's such a great tool that can be used virtually. It's so fun. So if you're not familiar with Taco Chat, I really encourage you to look at it. It's a good time. Courtney, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I think that it really kind of makes you, the thing that you took for granted before, really have to make that proactive effort. The both of you touched on engagement opportunities that you may not be able to be in the same room, and that's where certain people thrive, but what are additional ways that you can engage with someone? I think Melissa made a good point with the training as far as there are going to be hiccups. And so kind of changing, adapting, being vulnerable, and understanding, that really helps with a new hire training to build rapport. You're building that engagement and that relationship with that new hire, that person is then going to be going through maybe technical difficulties where the company may also, she mentioned there were a couple hiccups. I think we've all kind of been there where we may have had a few technology hiccups, but that relationship that was built through the training really kind of carries forward. And then, as Beth said, can have group chats. You can encourage each other, where because you're face to face, you may not mention it, but because you get the chance to high five with a taco, you're going to take that chance.
Sure. Well, and I know that, you know, when the whole pandemic started and I thought, wow, like how would you have a training class right now, right? And I was thinking, well, you know, if I was in my previous life and I was still the director of training, what would I be able to do to help with, like we were talking about initial and ongoing training? How would I be able to help my new hires or my veteran collectors with tests, right? If they're taking their FTCPA tests or any type of paperwork or things like that that normally you might give them in class, how could I do this virtually? I was thinking, you know, I used to run a program called SkyPrep. And so for those of you out there that may be looking for something similar, it's SkyPrep. It's pretty inexpensive, and it's like a learning management system. So you probably all most likely have a learning management system, but through this learning management system, you should be able to push out email notifications, quiz notifications, where they can just log in to that link, take their quizzes, take their comprehensive tests, their exams, HR forms, any type of policies, procedures, work instructions, and push those out to those people so they can take care of it virtually. And so, you know, to Corey's point, probably some of the stuff we were already doing, but we just didn't push it to the next level of doing it virtually. So hopefully all that helps.
Did, and it gave people a chance to ask more questions, which are now flowing in. So let's see here.
We like questions. Ready.
One from, I think it's a coworker of yours, Beth. In addition to traditional career pathing for employees, do you have a company university type of program?
Ask me that again.
I think it's for everybody, but I think it was asked by someone who works with you. In addition to traditional career pathing for employees, do you have a company university type of program?
I can tell you that from my experience in my previous life, we did have a university type program where the employees would be, like I said, to be an ambassador, they would have to fill out an application. They would kind of have to apply, right? And we based that off of, you know, their attendance record, performance, things like that, their leadership skills, their engagement within the organization. And then there are always certain steps. And so, for example, in my previous life, we had something similar to a university for our trainers. So I had three trainers that reported to me. And they would become, through the ACA, a collection specialist, right? So they would take FTCPA, ECFT, and they would become a collection specialist. The next step or level into the university program is they would then go to the TFP program. So they would then take the steps necessary to become a trainer specialist. Once they pass and receive those credentials, now they're a trainer specialist, and then we're going to bump them up another level. And so we use a lot of their credentialing through the associations to be able to get them up to where we wanted them to be. I know at our organization, we do have something similar at State, where we do have a leadership program, kind of similar to what I used to do in my previous life, where they have to apply and they become a part of this group, a very select group of individuals that can, I can't remember offhand, the top of my head, how long the program is, but it's not a quick, fast, easy program, and it's not an easy program to go through. And then you graduate, and when you graduate, you're considered a future leader. And when promotions become available, positions become open, and you've graduated from the future leaders program, you then are able to apply for those positions and look and see if that is something that you'd be a good fit for, which, again, really, I really think that goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the session. Not every collector is going to make a good manager or supervisor. Not every collector is going to make a good trainer, right? But it helps enable you to determine who would be, right? Because maybe you have somebody like, you know, George. I don't know if there's any Georges on the call, but maybe you have somebody like George who isn't doing so well as a collector, but man, George really can find people. His stealth skills are unbelievable. He can find anybody on the phone. So maybe he'd be a good candidate for skip tracing team. Or maybe, you know, Samantha isn't so hot on the phone either, but she really knows numbers and she really understands KPIs. She might be good as an analyst. And so these type of programs, whether you call it a career path, future leaders, an ambassador program, a university, it's really going to help you look at what talents you have in your organization across the entire organization and be able to move them into a good fit role that would keep them with your organization for long term. One of the most expensive things a company can do is turnover and rework. So by investing in these type of programs with your current employees, it's just really going to help grow your organization and get that tenure there. What do my girls have?
Yeah, so I think that's a very important point at the end that you made dealing with tenure. People are looking for growth. And when we think about growth, a lot of people think of promotion. And it's a promotion to a leadership role. And that may not always be an opportunity within smaller agencies. And so working to develop these individuals will help with tenure too. Really, it keeps them engaged. It keeps people being challenged. And it also helps with them in their particular role to be successful. And that's what team members are looking for, to feel fulfilled and satisfied in their role and continuing to feel that time after time, month after month, year after year, helps them to stay with the company and not go looking elsewhere. What about you, Melissa? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I'll have to piggyback off of you both. I agree. Tenure is very important. If a person is not engaged, they're going to job hop. If they're not interested in what they're doing or if they're not getting feedback. So it's very important to develop your employees and your trainees and keep the programs going and find out what it is that they want. A lot of times you have to bring it out of them, like in your one-on-one sessions, and you're not even sure. Sometimes they're not clear if they'd be a good manager. I've had people tell me when I managed a team, I didn't know if I'd be a good manager or not, but they were a good collector and I saw leadership qualities in them. So sometimes it needs to be nurtured. So those types of programs, like the leadership programs and development programs, will be helpful in nurturing someone's natural talent.
Okay. More questions here. Are any of the three of you hiring or training remote employees fully, as in like they are from somewhere other than where you do not have physical office space?
Yes, but we have been doing that prior to COVID. So we've always had a remote staff of collectors, and we actually, prior to COVID, have an office. I'm not from Wisconsin. I'm in Ohio, so forgive me for not knowing the town, but there's a town way up there somewhere in Wisconsin where we have a remote office where we would train the remote collectors and they would go home and they would work remote. But now that with COVID, we're doing all of our new hire training remote.
Okay. Melissa, back to your buddy program. Are the buddies normal representatives or are the buddies held to a somewhat higher standard like a team lead or the ambassador program? If they are normal reps, what is their response like when they are assigned a new hire? Is there any type of pushback or negative emotion? And if so, how do you roll that program out?
Well, the buddies are usually a team lead or a high potential, someone who's looking to move up and looking for growth. So they're taking, and their attendance plays a role also, plays a part, performance, all of that. Do we get a lot of pushback? No. We're interested, when we're looking for a buddy, we're looking for people who are eager and excited and who want to help the new hires. There are people like that. So I understand, I've seen the other side too, where you have the person who's like, oh my gosh, I got to do this again. So we don't even bother with them. We offer lunch, we'll give a gift card. Like anytime my buddies are active, I make sure that I reward them with something. And then I stay connected with the people on the floor in production. So because of relationships that I've built, they'll do things for you. You know, if you build, you know, it's relationship building. So that's part of it. But we do offer a small incentive. It's not monetary, but when the buddy program's over, they're finished with their assignment with the new hires for that 4 months. You know, I've taken them to lunch or given them some type of small gift card or something like that. So the people that we're choosing, we don't get pushback. If we do get pushback from someone, we won't ask them anymore.
Sure. And I think, you know, a good thing that I just want to piggyback on with you, Melissa, is that, you know, a lot of times, especially with the newer generations coming into our workforce, it's not necessarily monetary that they're looking for, right? They just love flair. They want everybody to know that they're a buddy. They want everybody to know that they're an ambassador or mentor. They want the banners. They want the little badge or the name tag or the certificate.
Trophy.
Yes. They love flair, like Office Space, right? Where's my flair? You don't have enough flair. And so sometimes just letting out, even announcements in newsletters or a big taco coming through the air is good enough. So,
I think also when we see it, Melissa had talked about making sure we're asking the right people. It kind of also references to, like, what's the culture? What's the foundation in the new hire training of having that shared purpose of helping others and seeing to the success of a company? I know with collectors, sometimes they can, on their end, view it, this is my call, but it's important to have them have a big picture too. So we kind of work on, from the beginning, having the foundation of helping others as far as with the training. So we do not receive that pushback, but that's a great point too, pertaining to who you're picking.
We have a question, Beth, from someone named George.
Hi, George.
but it's for Melissa, asking about your retention rate with virtual training.
Well,
the degree you're willing to share.
It's been a little shaky, I'll say. So back in May, we did have a new hire class of about 25, and I think 60 days later, we had 15 from that class. Same with our class in June. We had a class of maybe 20, ended up with half. So we knew going in, with the hiring process, that there would be quite a few applicants who applied just to have a paycheck and wouldn't stay. Or when their job opened back up, they would be leaving. So we went in with those expectations and knowing that that might happen. So we understood that we may take a loss. Yes, a lot of energy was put into the training program virtually, so it was a little agitating, but we understood that it could happen, and it did.
But I think too that a lot of it, you know, even with the higher, maybe a higher turnover than a face-to-face class, I think people have the conception that it's so easy to work from home. I roll out of bed, I'm in my pajamas, I brush my teeth, I go to the computer and I work all day and it's great. And it's not as easy as people think it is. You know, you have to really have a strong work ethic and, you know, and our industry is challenging all in itself, right? And so it is a lot of information. It's a lot to deal with as a new hire, and then to do it virtually, right? And so, like we've been talking about the last 45 minutes or so, that's why it's even more crucial that we do what we have to do to stay engaged and stay as connected as we can by keeping those cameras open, having those virtual coffee chats, doing, I'm one of my committees for the ACA. We do a virtual happy hour. You know, so, and it could be virgin, you know, however you want to do it. But the point is let's stay connected other than just logging into work every day, you know? So like you were saying about your buddy system with the monetary, non-monetary, you know, accolades or rewards, you know, how about instead of logging off at 5 o'clock today, we're going to technically log off at 4:30 and let's have a 30-minute virtual happy hour and let's just talk to each other. You know, I'm going to show you my dog. You know, I'm going to show you, you know, what my new flower bed looks like, whatever. But really get to know them to keep that interaction, because you're not standing next to them looking in their cubicle at their pictures, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, getting to know them is going to be critical to that piece too.
Yeah. And then staying connected too, because if you think about people are at home, some people, you know, your children are at home, your spouses. So everybody's still under some stress just from being home and confined. Yep. So that's another layer there. So the connection, that connecting is very, very critical. Yeah.
Yes. Maintaining that long distance relationship for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. And then also taking time to get to know them, that they're not just a number, that when they're on board, they're not just another team member who's on my team. I'm so excited. Well, no, I can't see that picture in your cube. I can't see you changing what pencil case that you have or the trinket that you brought in. So take to get to know them, that they're not just a number for your particular team, really adds to it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Let's see, another question here. What areas do you often find to be sort of the most overlooked? Let me stick a pin in that. There was another question I wanted to ask. So, Melissa, with respect to your retention rate, do you think that's just a function of the people you are hiring? Do you think it's a function of virtual training? Like, is it just, you know, is that just going to be the way the retention rate, you know, as you sort of transition to virtual hiring and virtual training? Or do you think it's just sort of more working the kinks out of your new program?
Good question. I believe that it's part of being virtual. Not the program itself, but maybe who we're hiring, the hiring process. That's part of it, I believe. Because they all did well with the training, understanding the concepts and the different things that we trained, the testing part of it. Everyone did well, they were engaged, and it was once they hit production and they were in production for a couple of months, either they didn't last because they had to be termed for something or they left. So that one's hard to say. I mean, it's really hard to answer. I think it's just going to be part of the virtual world, to be honest, my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a combination of all of those things. You know, yeah. I think it's just, you know, people can interview well, and you don't have, you know, you don't have that, you know, in-person interaction to really look at body signals, you know, kind of get a good vibe from them, because it is through a screen. It's virtual. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so, and again, you can explain a job so much, but I think that people just really think that working from home is much easier than it is.
It's not, right.
Have you had any challenges setting up side-by-side shadowing sessions between the trainee and their trainer? Someone's eyes got big.
Yeah. So, well, I can start with this one. It first started as technology, and maybe as we moved to the remote setting, we really had to kind of see what options that we had out there. But that was one of the like first obstacles. And then the second obstacle was being comfortable with it, as far as with our trainers and leaders, making sure that have your camera on. It's not you are multitasking. It's no, you're still paying attention to that person. If you were side by side in their cubicle, would you be answering emails? Would you be following up with other chats? Probably not. So that was one, as far as on a different front of an obstacle of doing side by side, was really making sure that the team members were not multitasking, but spending time with the person that they were trying to be coaching with. Maybe on your guys' end, you kind of dealt with Melissa or Beth having to work with the trainers on how to do the side by side virtually.
Yeah, that was a challenge. You know, we had to set up different Zoom rooms in order to, so they could be together privately, in order to discuss, you know, whatever needed to be discussed, right? Or whether they needed to just have a one-on-one for something, discuss behavior, whatever the case. So we had to figure it out. Like you said, that was the initial hiccup, like, wait a minute, what are we supposed to do? How should we do this? So we had to kind of figure it out and play around with Zoom. And sometimes we weren't able to do Zoom and had to be a conference call or what have you. So we just had to play around a little bit and just kind of come up with some ideas. And I think, well, I hope that, you know, there will be more things out there for us to, you know, if we continue this virtual world, that we'll have more options available. I already know there are other options. We just as a business have to look into them. So yeah, it was challenging. It's been challenging.
And I think one thing that is very helpful is if you do call recording, and if you do any type of live monitoring, and if you're able to do that, you know, working remote connected through the VPN, I think that's critical too. One thing that I always love to do, and I think is very important now, is when you're listening to calls, to have your trainees also fill out an evaluation form. And so what I like to do is I like to play those call recordings and have them fill out the call evaluation form at the same time I am. And then let's talk about that call and compare how you scored the call versus how I scored the call and see where is it the disconnect at? Where are we not in sync? And why did you think this part was good, or why did you think that part was not as good? Because it really will help you align yourself with where your new hires are at mentally with respect to call performance and call handling and compliance and negotiations and your authentication process. And so, you know, if you don't have the ability to do side-by-sides or any type of shadowing virtually, because some of us are small shops, right? We don't have those bells and whistles. So how do we make it work? So sometimes just doing that type of call evaluation process with your call recordings is helpful.
I like that idea.
Thank you. I think that makes a good point of people learn differently. And when one method is taken out and there isn't an option and you're kind of forced to figure it out, trying other methods of writing things down, even though you may only be on a phone call and listening to the call that you are reviewing, but still engaging that new hire, that collector that you're talking through by having them write something down. Mm-hmm. Or at least the expectation that they write something down and you're going to review the form. I think that's a really good point, too, of learning styles when taken out.
Yep, and you've got those three styles, right? Your audio, your visual, and your kinesthetic. And so to your point, Courtney, if you're doing something like that, you've got your audio learner listening to the call, your visual, you're seeing a form, you're seeing what's going on, and then your kinesthetic actually filling out the form and helping with that retention level because you're hitting all those areas. Yeah, good point.
Love it. Yeah.
To that point, here's a question. How do you work with employees who have undergone initial training and retraining and are still having issues retaining basic information?
So
up or out.
For me, I guess I would have to take a step back and look at everything that they've learned. In my training, in my previous life, I had a training checklist, and it was every single thing that we covered in training, and it had the date that we were going to do it, and next to it, the employee would have to initial and date when they actually learn that task and that they understand how to do that task. I also did a lot of comprehensive quizzes too to ensure their knowledge. We would have, I'm sure all of you have test accounts, right? So I would have them practice documenting test accounts and monitoring calls and doing evaluations and how to handle the dialer and all that good juicy stuff. So for me, I would take a step back and look from that day one through that checklist, through their comprehensive quizzes, the final test, all that good juicy stuff, and say, where is the disconnect? Because for me, I think it comes to a point of if I've trained you, and then I've retrained you, and we've talked about this, and we reviewed it. Is it really a training issue, or is it a discipline issue? Yeah. And I think that's where you need to find the definitive line there, because in my experience, the majority of the time, it's a discipline issue for one reason or another. I think that's where I would look first. But then if it doesn't seem that it's a discipline issue, you know, maybe they're just not going to cut the mustard for that specific position, right? Or maybe they really, truly just don't understand, you know, how to operate the system, or they're not comfortable talking to senior citizens on the phone, or they feel bad about telling somebody they have to pay the bill when they get the reason for delinquency.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a lot of different little corners you need to hit in order to decide what action you would take after that.
No, I agree. We have those same processes in place, the checklist, and I can't count on my hands how many times I've done a training and got an email, such and such said that they didn't know this information. Sorry, they signed off that they were trained, and they signed off at the refresher course, right? So I used to get offended as a trainer, like, excuse me, you know, but it goes back to, if this is not a training issue, you know, it is, like you said, a discipline issue, a retention issue. So now the manager needs to get involved as the manager of that employee. Now maybe you need to do some one-on-one training, and then, you know, there may be some necessary disciplinary action steps if they can't retain the information. Because I just think you can't continue to just train the same thing, and they keep doing the same thing wrong. I mean, It's the person, not the training program at that point.
And I think that what we were discussing earlier and throughout the session, talking about getting to know that employee, I think is important, because there's been multiple times in my career that I've sat down as the director of training and had a conversation with a collector. And the problem is, they have an underlying issue at home, and mm-hmm. they're not getting sleep, or they're not mm-hmm. able to disconnect from whatever underlying issue is at home, which is causing them to continually have errors. And so getting to know that person, maybe instead of them coming into work, like one of my closest friends, she couldn't get to work at 8 o'clock in the morning if you gave her $100,000. She just could not. Was it a training issue? No, it's more of a discipline issue, but just by having the conversation with her, changing her schedule to 10:30 to 7 made the big difference in the world. She's a top collector mm-hmm. for years after that. So also getting to know who you're dealing with, what could there be an underlying issue that's causing that?
Good point. We talked a little bit, or Beth, you mentioned a little, the idea that some of these collection agencies aren't very big and may not have a dedicated trainer. So in that case, who should be in charge of training? They don't have somebody like each of you who are, I'm sure, excellently running training operations.
You're so kind. In my previous life, I started at that agency. They did not have a training program. They're a commercial agency, and they were going into the consumer world. And so when I started, they really didn't have any type of training. And what they did, and on my first day, I said, well, I kind of shadowed the new person who started the same day as me. And I wanted to see, how do they train somebody? And the person literally came in, they met with the control of the company, they signed forms, then they went to the collections manager. And how the collection manager trained the employee was, they sat them down with a book on what to read, what to do, and then after that, they would start shadowing collectors, and so it kind of fell onto the collections manager. And so if you are a small shop and you don't have a training manager or training supervisor, then it does fall onto most parts your collections manager. Maybe somebody in HR does your training. And I think that that's fine. If you don't have a training manager, that doesn't mean you can't have a great training program, and that doesn't mean you can't train everybody successfully. You have more on your plate, most likely, but there are certain ways that you can monopolize your time to help when you are training and wearing multiple hats in the organization. But in my experience, it's usually HR or your collections manager or supervisor.
Yes, we're going to have that view too of it takes a village. HR department, our recruiters, and then also the supervisors, and then with our mentors too. So if there was not a trainer for that particular role, it takes everyone coming together to help the success of that individual for the company as a whole. So we may wear multiple hats, but we may also work in multiple units helping them out too.
All right, time for one last quick question here. Let's see, on my list, what can I choose that we'll get through? It's important but quick. What advice would you give to an agency that's building a training program from the ground up? That's a one-word answer.
That is so not a quick answer, ever. So I did that in my last life, and what advice would I give? If you're building a training program from the bottom up, talk to everybody in the organization. Mm-hmm. Talk to everybody. Talk to HR. Talk to your payment processing teams. Talk to your IT folks. Talk to your controller. Talk to everybody. Talk to collectors. Talk to skip tracers. Talk to everybody and just pick their brains and find out what the culture is like, what they didn't like when they started the organization, what they did like, what they felt they needed, what they didn't get, what they did get. And then build it from there.
Yes, I think I have two really quick. Rome wasn't built in a day, but also getting feedback from those going through the process. There may be multiple iterations of your training program, and that's okay, but make sure that you're asking those who went through the process so you can make it improved for the next round.
Mm-hmm. And I would just say, know the business, know the product, know the culture of the company.
Yeah. See, that wasn't so tough. You guys did that really quick. So, well, listen, we've run out of time. So, Beth, Melissa, Courtney, thank you so much for your time and your expertise today. Really
thank
appreciate you,
you
sharing such thank great you. Information with our audience.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Excellent. Bye, guys. Thank you.
Thanks again to Chris Rickman at Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.peakrevenuelearning.com to learn more about that company. Thanks to everybody who asked questions and participated today. Stay safe. Stay well. We got one more webinar tomorrow on understanding what an abusive practice is. And we're back next week with more webinars. So it's, sign up at accountsrecovery.net. And we'll see everybody soon. Until then, take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.